I'm going to ask the panelists if they have any questions of their colleagues on the panel. Why don't we start with that in terms of what they've heard from their colleagues this afternoon? Jose. There's a few microphones we can spread out there.
It's actually not a question, but a comment. When I was hearing my fellow members of the panel describing the problems that young scientists are confronting, I realized that, at least in my case, I presented the vision of a person who is no longer physically young. And then I asked myself, if I were a young scientist, and maybe I'd like to ask a question to young scientists in the room. So the question I asked myself, if I were a young scientist, would I be attracted to do research on AIDS? And my response to myself was, of course. And I found at least four reasons. One is that AIDS is probably one of the major health challenges that we are confronted today. If I were a young scientist, I would like to be involved in the solution of that problem. I don't want to work in a problem that is minor, that will have several publications, but I would really not be making a major contribution to global health. Second, AIDS is a problem in AIDS vaccines that has not been solved. My God, I may be the person who will be solving these problems. It's an opportunity. As you mentioned that, it's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity for young scientists. So I would like to give it a try for me to be the person who will solve the problem. Third, actually, there are funding. There's a lot of funding for HIV research, much more than in other areas. So that's one reason for a young scientist to do research on AIDS, because I think that still, even when it's very competitive to get grants, there are other mechanisms by which a young scientist can actually do research. Perhaps at the beginning being part of those big research consortia, but there is funding to explore your ideas. And I guess fourth is because there is a realization and a political and organizational realization that we need to bring new blood, new young scientists to the field. So I am one of them. So I give you four reasons why, if I were a young scientist, I would work on AIDS.
All right, Dan or Thumbi, do you want to reply to Jose? Or maybe I'll even open up now. Anybody in the audience want to give their perspective on that? Jeff, you're not a young scientist, sorry.
What is the definition of
young scientist? Well, I'm going to ask Dan or Thumbi to reply first.
Well, Jose, I think that... I think that those motivating factors are very strong, and I think that those are the motivating factors that a lot of us went into the field with, and I think those are as strong today as they have ever been, perhaps even stronger, because the need is there, the need scientifically and the need from a global health perspective. And I think that I think young investigators in the field are hearing the message that the senior leaders in the field are seeing it as a priority. I think they're hearing that message.
Dobby?
I mean, I would agree that there are very strong reasons to want to get interested in HIV vaccine research, particularly for a researcher from a developing country. But I would say, I would argue that that the hurdles, the obstacles, I think, for an investigator from a developing country are much, much bigger. Because even though there is, for example, Jose says that there is a lot of funding available in HIV vaccine research, probably more than in other fields, that actually the trickle-down effect to researchers working in developing countries is not there. And I would never forget when I first went to Botswana to work there. I applied for an R1 grant. And one of the comments that I got was that the reviewer who reviewed my proposal did not see how somebody working in Botswana could develop an academic career within that kind of environment. So here we are as a global research community encouraging Africans and other investigators from resource-poor countries to go back and contribute directly to their communities, but at the same time making it very difficult for them to access funding. Luckily, I think for me, there were other sources of funding that have been able to support my career within that setting. But I would argue that the hurdles are much higher for researchers working in a resource poor setting.
Jeppe?
I support what Jose said, but I think that if we really want to tackle the problem, the problem is really how to attract these scientists from other fields. And then I think that they grow up and they are educated, thinking of science in a very different way. That I think that is one of the issues that we should really be conscious, because for them, to develop a scientific program is to be able to prove their own ideas. And then I think that that is, it's very important to be part of the community, because the problem which will be, it's very important. But at the same time, this is not sufficient. I think that there is a need, really, to open up some discussion with these young scientists, and then to let them to understand that maybe science is not only to address some mechanistic, things in a mouse model. But I think that a lot of these, scientists, they remain very, very, stick to their, animal model, where they are not necessarily interested in addressing, translational, science, which is much more challenging, much more difficult.
I mean, this raises, of course, a broader issue of, as we move into, in all areas of biomedical research, more translational work, a lot of the structural challenges that we, all five of you talked about today, are there across the board. And so it's not unique to HIV, but more generally. And of course, at the same time, with all these new technologies, a point that Sidney Brenner has been making quite eloquently recently, now is the time to consider the human as a model organism. We have the technologies to really investigate humans as if they were inbred strains of mice. We have the power of these new technologies. So we have this tension that I think we need to address. Are there other issues that any of the five of you want to raise of the other four before I ask you some specific questions?
I want to build on Jose's question, and specifically to Dan and Thumbi, not so much why you got into the field, but why you stayed. Why are you still in the field? Okay, that's a different question.
Thumbi, you want to start?
I mean, I think it's a very pertinent question for me, obviously, because I would say that I'm not only in the field, but I'm also working in an area where I think it's, in a sense, very difficult to be working, just because of some of the challenges that I've mentioned. But I think that for me, the thrill of being in the field is just the realization that I'm contributing directly to perhaps the most important public health problem facing my community today as an African. So, I mean, that to me is a big incentive to be there. And also I think that, for me to have the opportunity to actually contribute directly, because I could do what I'm doing, it could be argued that I could do what I'm doing in the West, but for me to be contributing directly to the communities that I relate with on a daily basis, and also for me to be able to influence particularly and mentor some students in a way that I would not be able to do, actually to me makes me on a personal level feel very satisfied and very content to be doing what I'm doing, particularly to be able to mentor people that would be the next generation of investigators, some of whom are actually in this room this afternoon.
Dan, do you want to say, respond to that?
I guess it's a complicated question, but in the short term, certainly, I think the answer is I've been very fortunate to have very good mentors throughout my career, both as a student and as a postdoc and as a junior faculty. And it's the outstanding mentors that I've had. Certainly, I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have the mentorship I've received. So that's on a personal level. On a scientific level, I think that I'm still in the field because of the same reasons why I joined in the first place, which is that I can't imagine any scientific challenges that are more interesting or difficult. And I also can't imagine any aspect of research that would address a more important global health problem.
Jose gave one piece of advice for the enterprise, which is to set up with a journal opportunities for young people to write columns, perhaps about their personal experiences or whatever. So I'm going to broaden that for a moment and just ask an open-ended question to the panel of advice you might have for the enterprise about what else or what should we be doing on this issue. They're not prepared for this question, probably. Jose's already off the hook.
I think there are two issues. One is when we think about bringing in new researchers in resource-poor settings. Clearly, one of the building blocks that was there to help Fumbi and others was bricks and mortar. And that's something that a lot of research funding organizations and development agencies don't invest in. So if the enterprise could find a way to go to organizations that do support bricks and mortar and get more Doris Duke Foundation built like buildings in these settings, that would serve as, you know, a fundamental infrastructure that could be useful and that other funders and donors could build on to help build research and research careers. And I forgot what the second one was.
It's an age-related phenomenon. Jeffy, do you have any?
I think the enterprise, I think it would be extremely interesting to organize, a meeting when you are able to gather, young scientists at least, really to directly listen from them what they think. I think that we should really listen to them and to understand what they would like to propose, not being only from the side of the funders, but really to hear their voice and to understand really what they want. Because I think that that is the best way to find maybe some solution that they will satisfy.
Good idea. You remember
the second. Yeah. See if I can. So I think when we think about the new technologies that we'd like to bring into the vaccine field, those new technologies are being used in other areas. So if the enterprise could go to meetings where those young investigators are presenting their work and have some satellite sessions with them such as this to talk about opportunities to apply their skills, their tools to the AIDS vaccine field, that might help, build some bridges between young folks with those new tools and the baby boomers who are, going to retire in the next 10, 15 years and need to hand over their lab to someone.
You're all being very patient out here, so I have a lot more things we could ask the panel, but I think I'm going to turn to the audience. I'm looking at you, Pat. Pat Fass is from IAVI, and IAVI's had a lot of experience in capacity building in resource-poor settings. So, Pat, would you say a few words about, from your perspective?
Thanks for organizing this very thought-provoking. I never realized how lucky I was to get my first R01 at 31. But I have to say that it was from directed funding. It was the war on cancer. I probably wouldn't have gotten it otherwise. So at IAVI, we are trying to do capacity building, which I think has a supportive effect for people's careers. And we work with a lot of African and Indian investigators. But it's particular. I want to think more about Africa because that's, I think, where it's needed most. Dr. Ndugu had, a lot of good points about that. We have built or renovated, because we have some difficulties, as Peggy said, about, putting money into bricks and mortar, built or renovated laboratories and clinics. And these laboratories and clinics are run by Africans for the most part. And they are a place where people can do their work and can help build their career. We are not, we have not been in the business of funding PhDs and that, you know, we've done a few master's degrees and whatnot, but we're not really an educational institution. So that all has to be done in partnership with universities. And we would like to expand that activity, and we're thinking about how to do that. But I do think that, you know, what was really mentioned here is the consistency of the funding is critical to help people build their careers. So people want to go back, and they can build a career when trials start and stop and the funding ebbs and flows with that that issue. And people have said, you know, that organizations such as mine are, you know, what do we want to say, helicopter researchers, but at IAVI at least. And I think this is largely true for, certainly for Aris Foundation, which works on TB vaccines as well. We're really not in the business of doing that. We really are trying to build a research team and to continue to support that research team for the long haul. And that's difficult to do when work ebbs and flows. And it's particularly hard, I think, for a place like NIH, because it has to have a lot of peer review of things, and sometimes it's a little more difficult for them to make that long haul investment. So I totally agree that we need more Doris Duke funding and more other foundations, Gates, Wellcome Trust, EDCTP, people to put in that some kind of a baseline of long-term funding so that we can have the technical training, the facilities and whatnot, on which people can build their careers. And then we need the universities, like Harvard has done so well, and other universities, to come on top of that to give the advanced training. So it's a multifactorial effort. I would like to say that I really like Jose's idea, and I also think, Alan, that since you're important in organizing meetings, like, for example, the AIDS vaccine meeting, you should take a look at the average age of the plenary speakers at that meeting. In the old days, when I was at NIH, and we very early, before Peggy was in charge, we had a meeting that we used to invite people to, and we made an effort to not allow senior people to present published work, and only to have kind of the younger people who had actually done the work with their own hands. This was not well received by some of the senior people. Some of them went to Tony Fauci and complained, and it didn't come out very well. But I think, you know, you're probably in a position where you could try to emphasize having people who are not most senior people do the presentations or write the papers. I think you can help with that. Don't forget the Matthew effect. If you look back, somebody will have to look back in science for, I don't know, 15 years ago or something. It's a brilliant article about how when there's a long string of authors, the most famous gets all the credit for it. As in Matthew got the credit for, you know, as in, they were quoting, to him who hath it shall be given. And then there was a very, very clever letter to science after that that said, you know, that quotation also occurs in Mark, Luke, and John, and you did not give them credit.
Okay, other comments in the back?
Thank you. My name is Society, a former HIV vaccine researcher, actually. Many people ask the question why I gave up on HIV vaccine research, which is not true. I think the reason of my abandoning the research career was something that Jose said, lack of professional security and career path, and many of the aspects that Jeffy actually commented on. And I think as Pat also touched upon, one of the important issues on keeping young investigators in the HIV vaccine field is the consistency of funding, and also for the funding agencies to be committed to actually fund new and innovative ideas and be more restrictive on giving big, large grants to the repetitive approaches, which we have seen that hasn't been very successful previously. And also, I think one of the things that Jeffy meant as well about these big networks is very common that when there is a smaller project on maybe a risky approach, it's usually abandoned when people join a bigger network in order to comply with the bigger network's goal and the clinical trials and the milestones that the network set up. So I think that's definitely one of the obstacles. But I also have one question for Jose. regarding to your presentation. I found it very fascinating, especially when it was the study on the age peak achievements. And I couldn't help noticing that it was a study made by on men only. So I was just wondering if you know if there is any study that has shown what is the peak achievement for women and how does the reality look like when it comes to the age of independence for female researchers.
I have two ladies working very close to me in Seattle and they asked me the same question. and I have the answer actually. I mean, this is not my paper, I didn't show. First of all, the scientists who were surveyed were 285 or so, but I only providing data in 1978, because the other few were women. Sure enough, their age is 10 years older. The peak is between 40 and 50, actually. It's a shift. I don't have an explanation, but they actually need and she won't ask me the same question. And I have the answer.
You have an explanation?
No, I don't have. Oh, you have? I don't have the explanation.
I wasn't going to comment on the reason for women being older, but I think it's because they have to have their babies first. So I'm just building on Pat's comment about the role of universities. I wanted to sort of raise the question of whether there's maybe one person missing from the panel, which is somebody who represents, you know, academic institutions and, you know, settings or policy at the academic institutional level. And ask the question of whether or not, you know, there are a lot of nascent global health programs being set up now, University of Washington, Duke, all over the country, who are beginning to think about, you know, how to design these programs around global health. And I guess I would think that there might be an opportunity there to really bring the leaders of those academic programs to the table and really push them to use those new global health programs as an opportunity to treat young investigators in academic institutions who are focusing not just on HIV vaccines, but malaria and other tough diseases that, you know, undoubtedly suffer from the same issues, to really treat the young investigators in those new global health departments in a different way.
That's
and maybe the enterprise can catalyze that discussion.
Yeah, excellent suggestion. Many of the global health, this is not to reject the suggestion, because I think it's a good one, I will follow up on that. But many of the global health programs being set up all over the world actually are not focusing on biomedical research. They're focusing on economic issues, health services, health policy issues, which are important issues, but they're not focusing on the biomedical aspects, which itself is an issue, because it's creating this segregation, which I don't think is healthy for the field of people who do biomedical research and people who do everything else in global health. And so both of those issues need to be discussed. Kath.
I wanted to pick up on the two previous comments from the room because I had been thinking along very similar lines. It seems to me that, you know, given the difficulty of creating an AIDS vaccine, it really needs to be an interdisciplinary effort. And the old ways of thinking of people working in their labs alone, you know, it needs collaboration. Nobody can fit the amount of information that you into one person's head. You know, and especially the systems biology, you have to get so trained in, you know, the technology and the math and the statistics to be able to do that you then don't have enough time to develop the biological expertise needed to actually make those connections. So collaboration is really needed. And I would say that, you know, HIV has challenged us to question the old systems in so many ways, and this is another one of those where, you know, the research enterprise is really individually driven.
I had a question for Giuseppe. You said that you really believe that the most brilliant young scientists go into other fields. And I'd like to know, you know, why that is. What is it, the money? Is it the security? Or is it something more personal, like maybe they were touched personally by a certain disease? The HIV Vaccine Trials Network is actually part of the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center. So I've encountered a lot of young scientists in the cancer field, and I found that a lot of them have been touched by cancer personally. Maybe their fathers and mothers had cancer, so there's a passion in there, and there's a personal investment to stay in the field and to be in the field. And I kind of wonder, you know, if it's not the same way for a lot of young scientists in America especially, or in these developing nations where HIV isn't as much of a problem as it is in the developing nations. And maybe part of the solution can be to introduce to these people at a very young age, you know, people with HIV, communities affected, more affected by HIV, if that could instill some kind of personal investment and passion that is necessary.
Yeah, I think you have raised very good points, but I think that the points that you have raised are actually maybe, you know, may bring me to suggest something for the enterprise. You know, what I think these people, these young scientists, that not necessarily interested but to join the HIV vaccine field, it's also because they have a not necessarily correct perception of the field. I think that the field, what they read is what they read in science about where the money goes, or what they read in the newspapers, but not necessarily they are really have a good knowledge of all the scientific issues, the challenges, how things are organized. Then I think that I believe that there is a lot of groundwork that can be done in order really to make them a little bit more aware of all the scientific issues rather than have this very superficial view of the field based on what comes out in the newspapers.
Very good point. I think we have time for one more.
I just want to comment actually about the comment that was made earlier about particularly universities getting involved. And big universities, some of them, a lot of them are now beginning to have global health programs that hopefully will move them more into communities who actually need the research that they are doing, like Africa. But actually, I also saw, I'm a bit cautious about that approach. I think it's a brilliant approach if it's approached and implemented the right way, but I think there have been examples of Western institutions that went into African countries, and most of the research that is done there ends up, and I don't want to be too provocative about this, but kind of building the careers of the researchers from the mother institutions, and very little that actually remains that is sustainable in the long term in those countries in terms of developing researchers that would actually become independent investigators in their own right in those countries. So I think it's a good idea, and certainly, very supportive of it. I wouldn't be in the kind of position I am if I didn't have that kind of support. But it needs to be a realization by the people that are running these kinds of programs that they have to be facilitators, they have to act as facilitators that are actually investing a lot in developing local leadership so that they can take over some of these big problems in order for these programs to be sustainable
longer. Yeah, that's an excellent point. Together, we were trying to get an eclectic, heterogeneous, diverse group of people who would bring different perspectives, and I think we've more than succeeded. I think this has been very stimulating. Certainly has given me a lot of ideas about what role the enterprise should play, but I hope it's also been helpful for the funders, for researchers, for young people about what roles they should play, because I don't think this will be solved by any one organization or any one sector, but rather it needs to be a coherent approach by all of us who are involved in HIV vaccine research. I think Dan put it well, that the development of a vaccine is likely, I'm not sure you used that word, Dan, but I'll put it in there, is likely to be done not by the generation that entered the field in 1983, but by the next generation or the one after that, which for no other reason makes it all the more critical that we get the best and brightest young people into the field as soon as possible. I also want to thank all of you. You've been a really terrific audience and participants. And there's a whole slew of funders. I'm just going to read the names because I think it's a measure also, I think, of the institutional and organizational support for this discussion. ANRS in France, AVAC in the United States, CHVI in Canada, EDCTP in Europe, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the International AIDS Society, IAVI in the United States, the Academy of Sciences of the Developing World, UNAIDS, and the National Institutes of Allergies and Infectious Diseases. So thank you all very, very much for coming here today.